What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucks podcast. I am James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at thepewterplank.com and make sure you follow along on Twitter at Locked On Bucks, at thepewterplank, at @JYarko_Bucks, and at @DH82_Bucks. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. We took some time off. David had to travel for work and it just worked out better if we took ourselves a little mini vacation, but we are back and we have a few things to talk about on this episode. So coming up, David and I are going to get into the discussion, which has become a wonderfully, wonderfully timed, hot, rampant rumor amongst social media regarding the Buccaneers and a particular running back. And then we are going to get into a few Twitter questions. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into this wonderful rumor that has been floating around regarding the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and interest slash pursuit of Adrian Peterson. And of course, David and I were adamant last offseason about how good of a move this would be and how it would help the team. And Doug Martin had his suspension looming and it would give us that veteran presence and maybe Adrian would bounce back. And instead he signs with the Saints and he sucks there and he goes to Arizona and he plays really, really well against the Bucks. And then he sucked the rest of the season. But for whatever reason, it has become a hotbed topic. So David, I will kick it over to you. Do you think it would be a good idea for the Buccaneers to offer Adrian Peterson a 1 or 2 year contract to get that veteran presence in the running backs room, along with Peyton Barber and Jacquizz Rodgers and rookie Ronald Jones?
No, not this year. I mean, last year, like you said, we were all about it and we would have loved to have seen Adrian Peterson join the Buccaneers. And I'm not going to sit here and say that had that happened last year, his season would have been a whole lot different. He might have been the same running back that we saw with Arizona and New Orleans when he wasn't playing the Bucs. Anyway, but this year is a totally different scenario. Like this year, we don't have a starting running back who is going to miss the first three games of the year. And we have a rookie that's just been drafted. There's a lot of hype surrounding him. Peyton Barber finished the year strong. So there's a lot of excitement to see what he might be able to do this year. And honestly, looking at the two of them, I would at this point in the business and at this point, Adrian Peterson's career with his age and given how he performed last year and all the things combined, I would much rather roll into the season with Ronald Jones and Peyton Barber, presumably being the two main guys to carry the load, with Jacquizz Rodgers probably being a little bit of a buffer there in the first few weeks before they really start putting Ronald Jones in their whole lot, and Charles Sims playing his normal role as a passing down running back. There's no value in bringing Adrian Peterson into this mix right now. You've already got four running backs coming into camp that are either highly touted or have experience with the team. That's not counting your undrafted free agents and all that stuff. So the party is already pretty much filled. There's no reason to add even more drama to it. Adrian Peterson already showed when he went to New Orleans that he wasn't going to be happy standing on the sideline watching some younger running back get more carries than him. We saw that with Alvin Kamara. Well, what makes anybody think he's going to be happier seeing Ronald Jones get carries instead of him? You know, it's no, the ship has sailed.
I agree 100%. There's no point. I'm mad at us for having discussed this as long as we already have. Again, rewind the clock 1 year and we would be all in. At this point, it's time. It's better to move towards the future, not rely on a 33-year-old running back for any kind of help. You know, the future is Ronald Jones. It's best to stick with that. So with that, we are going to move on to some Twitter questions, and they've started accumulating a little bit. You know, David and I had a couple of interviews and we had some things that we wanted to cover and just haven't really gotten to all the Twitter questions that you guys have sent in, but we really appreciate you sending them. We're going to start tackling them a little bit. And I think at some point during kind of the slow season of the summer, once we get into end of June, into July, when there's really nothing going on, we're going to start doing some more fun Twitter interaction type episodes. Maybe not even Bucks related. Could be one of those like ask us anything and we'll tackle it on an episode. But for right now, we have a couple of questions that have been sitting in our queue for quite a while, and I want to go ahead and get to them. And the first one comes from our good buddy, Chef Aaron. And Chef says, with everyone whining and moaning about the safety position, could Whitehead be a sleeper to start at the beginning of the season like Quan did, or is he just too raw? Also, tell David there's so many reasons Michael Jordan is better than LeBron, but the best one is nothing beats perfection of 6-0 by the GOAT Michael Jordan. It's okay to be second place. Everyone else is wink emoji. So, what is your thought on rookie safety Jordan Whitehead? Could he be a sleeper to slide into that starting spot, or are we going to be looking at more of a Justin Evans and Chris Conte combination back there, getting Whitehead a few snaps here and there, rotating Tandy in as well? How do you kind of see this shaking out?
My Memorial Day prediction is Justin Evans and Chris Conte. However, if there is a player on the roster right now that could potentially unseat Chris, it would be Whitehead, in my opinion. But that's based off of nothing more than just kind of a raw athletic assessment. Like the kid has the physical tools to make it happen. It's just whether or not he can bring the mental side of it, you know, and the NFL speed and react properly to all the calls and the reads and everything else to make a big enough impact. To really make it happen. Like, it's going to be really hard because especially in the preseason, you don't see a whole lot of secondary players, I guess, really kind of showing out. You know, it's a little bit easier, I suppose, for a linebacker like Quan Alexander, not downgrading what he was able to accomplish his rookie year by any means, but a linebacker is always around the action. You know what I mean? The only thing a linebacker is not going to be close to is a 40-yard bomb. So anything else, you know, within that area, a linebacker has an opportunity to affect the play. So even when you're playing with the second string, you're playing with the third string, you know, you have the opportunity to show your team, show your coaches that you have something special that you can bring to the field. A safety is a little bit different. A defensive back is a little bit different because every second, third string quarterback that steps on the field is a guy who may not be all that accurate. He may not make good decisions. He may not set his receivers up for success. You know, and as a defensive back, that really makes your job a little bit more difficult when you're trying to show out and make plays because you might get an interception, but that interception might be a ball that was thrown 10 yards over a receiver's head because the quarterback made the wrong read and threw it right into your breadbasket. Well, it goes down the stat sheet the same as any other interception does, but from a coaching standpoint and from an evaluation standpoint, you didn't necessarily do anything to really make that play, if that makes sense. So it kind of, I don't want to say it doesn't help you. Anything helps you, right? But it's not going to help you as much as, say, picking off, you know, I don't know, Case Keenum throwing to Demaryius Thomas. Like, that's really going to help you as a defensive back. And just by the nature of the beast playing with the second string or third string team defense, you're playing against second string and third string offenses. And there's just going to be situations, the situations where you're going to be able to impress people are just going to be limited because of that. Now, if he does well enough in camp, he may get the opportunity to play and run with the ones, you know, even if it's just on a series or two. And if he gets that opportunity, that's when he's got to show up and make those plays. But at the same time, as a rookie with the lack of experience playing against what would then be probably a veteran quarterback or at least a really talented quarterback with a regular offense, those are also the opportunities you're going to get burned because they're going to take advantage of you being out there. So, do I think it's going to happen? I don't. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that Jordan Whitehead is going to be kind of a situational player, a role player, a spell player. You know, Chris Conte needs to take a breather. He'll come on the field and help out. He'll come out in sub packages, stuff like that, which isn't bad by any means. But I don't see, mainly because of the opportunities and because Chris Conte is such a veteran presence, I don't see him being unseated, at least before, you know, Conte gets a chance to go out there in the regular season and lose the job instead of Whitehead winning it.
Yeah, I think as it stands today, it's so early in the process that I would lean towards Evans and Conte being the combination back there. Once we get into actual, true, legitimate training camp, you might see Whitehead's athletic ability help push him and catapult him into that starting role. If he can get the system down, the terminology, you know, the your typical rookie learning curve. But right now they're in shorts and t-shirts and helmets. And I'm a big fan of Pat McAfee's podcast. And I was listening to one of his shows last week, and they were talking about how everyone in Indy is freaking out because of all these interceptions that are being thrown by whoever in the world their backup quarterback is. And, you know, how they're doomed if Andrew Luck can't come back and this and that and the other. And McAfee says, you know, just hold on. Everybody hold on. In OTAs, the defense has 100% of the advantages. In OTAs, it's see ball, get ball. Like, that's it. They're basically playing glorified catch. And, you know, the defense has all the advantages. So you can't read into a quarterback throwing interceptions in OTAs as anything more than, you know, just basically glorified catch or monkey in the middle, however you want to put it. So once we get into a situation where they are, you know, trying to run these certain schemes and they're throwing this terminology out and there's audibles and there's actual physical contact, we're going to get a better idea as to what Whitehead can do on the Buccaneers. We've seen him play for Pitt, and he has the athletic ability, and he's a very talented player, but talent in college doesn't always translate to talent in the NFL. We know that. So once we get deeper into the, into the swing of things here in the summer, then we'll get a better idea. But for right now, yeah, I agree 100% that we're looking at a Chris Conte and Justin Evans second, or, you know, safety duo rather than Whitehead jumping up there. But that's not to say that Whitehead has no chance at all. So David, the next one comes from Chris at TB_Bucks_No4Life. And he's sent us a novel. So I'm going to go ahead and get through part one here. And then he asks a question in part two, and he dives into a conversation he was having with his cousin about the selection of Vita Vea. And he says, just had a conversation with my cousin about Vita Vea and what he brings to the table. First of all, if he, McCoy, JPP, and Curry are all on the field at the same time, one of them will have a one-on-one. Second, Vea will help this team get off the field on third downs, which helps the field position battle. Third, running backs or quarterbacks who think they are just going to run up the middle have another thing coming. I mean, I would think twice running at Vea being a QB or a running back. You're not going to bulldoze through him. Fourth, he has speed and athleticism for his size, which helps his pass rush ability. If I'm Breeze, Ryan, or any other quarterback for that matter, I would not want to see a 350-pound man running towards me. Which brings me to the next point. His psychological effect he will bring to opposing teams is just as valuable as a sack or a tackle for loss. Lastly, he will bat the ball down at the line of scrimmage, something this team has not done well in the past. Do you think if the Bucs did not trade down to number 12, that they still would have taken Vea at 7? My theory is that if the Bucs had to pick at 7, they would have picked Derwin James because it filled a bigger need than a defensive tackle would have, given that they wouldn't have the extra picks. So basically, did Jason Light have two boards based on where they were picking? David, do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I'll let you go first on that one.
Okay. Yes, Vita Vea absolutely 100% would have been the pick at number 7. And I forgot to mark down when Chris sent that in, but like I said, we've been backed up on our Twitter questions, and basically we have heard that outside of the big three, Quentin Nelson, Bradley Chubb, Saquon Barkley, Vea was their highest rated player. So Vea was on their big board at number 4. Derwin James was at number 5. They traded out knowing that they would very, very likely be able to get one of their two guys in the top 5 outside of the big three. So yes, even without trading, if they were at 7, Vita Vea still would have been the pick. The thing about big boards is you don't have multiple big boards based on where you're picking. You have your one overall big board, and it can shift a little bit based on what you've drafted. I mean, if you draft a defensive tackle at number 12, and then you're coming up in the second round and your highest rated player at that point is another defensive tackle, well, they didn't need to draft another one. They moved on to a different position. Their highest rated player at a position of need, i.e. Ronald Jones. So you're not going to have 32 big boards based on what position in the draft you're drafting. You have your overall evaluation of all your players, and wherever you're picking, that's, you know, you're taking your personal top guy. The Buccaneers are not going to have a bunch of quarterbacks on their big board right now because they have Jameis Winston. They're not going to have a bunch of wide receivers on their big board because they have Mike Evans and they have DeSean Jackson and they have Chris Godwin. So their big board is based off of what they need for their team. Yeah, they're going to have some wide receivers. They're going to have some quarterbacks, but they're not going to be, you know, top 10, top 20 on their list because they don't need them. So what it boils down to is the Buccaneers made a move because they knew they could accumulate some extra picks and still get one of their top five guys. But Derwin James was never going to be the pick if Vita Vea was still on the board, you know, for the draft, which it turned out he was.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Vita Vea was going to be the guy outside the top three, Vita Vea was going to be the guy no matter what. And we had this conversation earlier on the podcast. Actually, I can't remember if it was this podcast or if it was the big one we did with all the other guys, or I don't know. It doesn't matter. But either way, in one of our episodes, one times we talked, I mentioned that I really don't like ranking needs. Like I don't like saying, you know, safety is the number one need. I don't know, running backs number two, so on and so forth. Because once you do that, that's when you start reaching for players. You draft the best player available, right? Which, of course, the best player available is also dependent on need. Like you mentioned, if you have Jameis Winston on your roster, quarterback is not a position of need for you, which means that the quarterback value or the value of all the quarterbacks on your board then goes down, right? So it's kind of a combination of both. So neither term really fits, you know, the exact formula, so to speak, of how I feel like teams should be drafting. But at the end of the day, if you have a need at a position and you have a guy who's raw talent and how you think he's going to fit into your system has him ranked above somebody else, then you absolutely take him. And we kind of talked about this when the draft happened. I want to say it was in our day one recap episode where Vita Vea provides more value across the spectrum of the defense than Derwin James does, which is why Derwin James is such a great addition for the Chargers and would have been less of a great addition, I feel, for the Buccaneers. Because with the Chargers, Vita Vea is already playing, Derwin James is playing behind what is most likely going to be an elite defensive line this year. A very solid linebacker group, has very good corners in front of him. So he's going to be in a position to really make a big impact in Los Angeles, which is going to make a lot of Buccaneers fans angry, especially the Florida State ones, because they're going to see this and be like, well, you could have had this in Tampa. No, that's not true. There's yeah, absolutely nothing in football that says, and free agency shows us this every single year. So I don't know why we always have this conversation, but there's absolutely nothing that says Derwin James having success in Los Angeles means he would have had this exact same success in Tampa Bay. Because if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers do not have a threatening interior line, which I like the signing of Bo Allen, I like the signing of Mitch Unright, I really do. They're not world beaters. You know what I mean? They're just not. That's not the role they came in to play. They're not your Don Terry Poe type of guy or whatever. Vita Vea has the potential to be one of those guys. He could be they say he's a more athletic Haloti Ngata, or maybe he can be like an Ndamukong Suh. We don't know if he's going to be that, you know, but he has the potential to become that. Mitch Unright and Bo Allen, I'm not saying they've peaked, but they're not going to suddenly turn into Haloti Ngata. They're not going to suddenly turn into Indominus. It's really rare to see, ever see that kind of thing happen, right? So if you put Derwin James back there with Justin Evans, and then you don't address the defensive line until day two, the value you're getting at either position, I don't know where they had other defensive linemen ranked, but the bottom line is the secondary talent was deeper than the defensive tackle talent in this year's class. That I don't think anybody would disagree with that. So that also raises the valuation of Vita Vea. But the bottom line is, as far as like different boards are concerned, you said it, and I 100% agree. You don't have a different board. You have one board. You rank all your players. You rank all your prospects, and you have one board, and then you arrange it as you see fit, depending on your strategy as a general manager, as a scouting staff, as a crew. You know, there's more than one guy. There's one guy making the decision, pulling triggers, but there's a whole lot of people in those war rooms, right? And then you kind of play it based off of how the board is going. After that, it's all kind of. It's a one big, you know, weekend of Russian roulette, because if you pass on a guy thinking you're going to get him later, you may not get him later because somebody might have done something surprising. And you kind of look at Carlton Davis, right? A lot of people have been like, did the Buccaneers really have MJ Stewart rated or, you know, graded higher than Carlton Davis? I don't know that answer. We don't know that answer. But what the answer could be, right, what is a feasible argument is because of Stewart's versatility, right? There's people who think he can play safety, he can play inside and play outside. Because of his versatility, the Bucs may have felt that there were enough teams out there looking for a versatile player in the secondary that he may have gotten taken, and they wanted to make sure they got that versatile player. Whereas Carlton Davis, as a true cornerback, may have been graded higher, and so they drafted Stewart first to make sure they got that key thing they were looking for, which makes him their best player available. And then when Carlton Davis is still there later on, they go and grab him too. And that leads us all to the question of, did you really have him grade over Carlton Davis? Well, it really doesn't matter when you look at the entire picture of how you decide to pick a draft pick. It's not just best talent. It's not just best fit. It's not just position of need. It's all of those things, and also what you think everybody else is going to do. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I can't imagine – every GM has their own strategy, of course, but I can't imagine any GM going in there with, like, you know, even five different draft boards, because that would just get crazy.
Yeah, as we've said before, it's about the collective, not the individual picks. It's, you know, pairing up, you know, this talent with this talent with this talent, just like with the team in general. It's not about having, you know, six Pro Bowlers on one team. It's about how does a unit of 53 men show up, practice together, study together, and in the end, how do they play together? So, like the comparison that I've used dozens upon dozens of times, it's an orchestra. Every different section has to be playing their part, and they have to do it all in unison in order for the team to succeed. And that's how the draft works. So with that, David, I think we're going to call this an episode. Please, everybody, continue to send in your questions or your comments or your stories or your pot shots at David for thinking LeBron is better than Michael Jordan. We appreciate those. We will continue to read them, and we want to be as interactive as possible, especially over the summer months when there's really not a whole heck of a lot going on. Of course, we're still waiting on the news that the Buccaneers have signed rookie running back Ronald Jones. He's the only member of the draft class that still has not signed his contract. So with that, David, anything else before we call it a day?
No.
You sounded very defeated in that. No.
We could do a whole other episode on this basketball thing, so I'm just going to leave it alone.
Oh, well, yeah, it was, speaking of basketball, we are recording Sunday night, and your game is about to start in 15 minutes. So let me be the first one to congratulate the Boston Celtics on going to the NBA finals, because neither of these teams can win a road game.
Yeah.
My buddy just sent me a picture of the Cavs starting roster, and it was LeBron.
Yeah, that might happen. So we'll see.
Yeah. Pretty much. So no, I'll be pulling for LeBron. I do like him a lot. He's just not Michael Jordan. But until we get to that inevitable debate during the slow part of the season, we might have to make that like some sort of call-in show. You can check out everything that we're doing over at thepewterplank.com, and make sure you're interacting with us on Twitter. send us those direct messages with those questions, those thoughts. It can be about anything, guys. We're getting into the slow part of the year. You know, you have OTAs wrapping up. There's not going to be a whole lot going on. Ask us anything. Ask us about, David's finally pretty much caught up on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He saw Infinity War today. Send us those questions. Send us basketball questions. Send us our questions about literature, whatever. Ask us anything. Don't send
baseball questions.
No, we can do baseball. I can do baseball.
You can do baseball.
I can do baseball. You can do a little bit of baseball.
I'll take that night off. The latest information I have about baseball is the Blake Street Bombers with Andres Galarraga, Larry Walker, all those guys just rocking things in Colorado. So, unless you want to talk about that.
I'll invite Scott on for that episode.
There
Scott
you go. I'll take the night off. I'll take the night off. You guys can have that.
Make sure you're sending us those direct messages to at Locked On Bucks, at the Peter Plank, at @JYarko_Bucks, and at @DH82_Bucks. We hope you all have a wonderful and safe and enjoyable Memorial Day, and we will catch you here next time at Locked On Bucks.